So I think really it's about enjoying this world and believing this life is a game and it's here for playing. I consider biohacking to be optimizing your health using technology, various supplements, nature, to essentially mimic a natural world in an unnatural environment. For me, pickup was to learn to be on the outside, who you are on the inside, and not care about what people think about you, but do it because it's fun for you or you're adding value to the world. And I think that's what I learned from the game. If you have a gun in your belt, it can be there to hurt, or it can be there to protect your family.
Yeah.
Well, learning psychology and pickup, it can be there to hurt, or it can be there to grow and use for the positive. And that's my mindset from that. And that's how I like to proceed. The healthier I am, the faster I can go, the more I can enjoy life and everything else follows. And it's not about the money, it's about the journey. And money is just a byproduct of doing what you love. Every single object, every single thing we see around us was really made by someone just like us. And if everyone had the same mindset of, I can't do that, then we wouldn't be where we are right now.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and truly do something with your life. In this week's episode, I have a guy coming all the way from London to share his knowledge and wisdom. His name is Tim Gray, and he's a biohacker, particularly interested in how to optimize the brain and body for mental clarity, stamina, and health. Let's welcome Tim Gray. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very good. How are you doing coming all the way from London to hang out in LA for a couple of weeks?
I'm very good. I'm enjoying it and I'm glad the weather is good now.
Yeah, I know. It's been so cold here and rainy. And I want to start with something that I ask all my guests, and that is, who is really Tim Gray at its core?
I think that's a really interesting question, and you got me with that one. I guess the biggest, most important thing for me is that I add value to the world and have great relationships, because everything else follows. And I think the health journey is one really, really interesting health journey for me, and it's helped me grow up, and it's made me meet some amazing people on this journey. So I think really it's about enjoying this world and believing this life is a game and it's here for playing.
That's a great answer. And I want to talk about your blue tongue, but first I want to ask you, what is biohacking? Because it's such a modern term that a lot of people talk about. What does it really mean for a person who never heard of it?
So I'd like to say that I've got a funky paragraph that explains it exactly, but I don't, because it's changing all the time for me. I consider biohacking to be optimizing your health using technology, various supplements, nature, to essentially mimic a natural world in an unnatural environment. So an example of that would be, if you don't get much natural sunlight, or you in the morning, for instance, you use blue light such as SAD lighting to help wake the brain up to reset the circadian rhythm. If you're not having enough sunlight and you're not getting enough near and far infrared light, using red light therapy, like Juve or Red Light Rising or any of these brands. Or if you have mercury toxicity, for instance, and you have high levels of mercury in your cells, and you're deficient in magnesium as a result, chelating the mercury out and replacing the cell, getting magnesium in there. Or if you're, any of these health reasons, is literally looking at it from a data perspective and changing something and then seeing the actual outcome, opposed to saying, take this pill and let's hope that you get better, you know. And again, this is something that comes up quite frequently, I think, and this is typical in the health world at the moment, and I would like to think that we all affect change in this area, is that instead of taking a medicine and hiding a symptom, it's about fixing the problem in the first place. And I think that will really make a big, big difference. I mean, to put an example on, this has come up several times recently, is if you have a baby and it's screaming, you don't lock it in the bedroom and soundproof the room to stop hearing the baby screaming, you go and deal with it so that it doesn't, so it's happy. And I think for symptoms in the body, that is what it is. It's a messenger to say something's not right, fix it. Yeah. And I think our body doesn't, it has a deficiency of something that needs making the body self-heal, and maybe a toxicity that needs removing so the body can heal as well, opposed to a deficiency in X drug. And obviously pharmaceuticals do have its place, definitely. Like, I've needed them myself along the way. I'm not going to deny that, but I think in chronic illness, it's a different matter. It's about removing the toxicities and fueling the deficiencies so that the body can heal itself, because it's an amazing piece of machinery.
Amazing, by the way. Like, I really love that, because a lot of times we think I have to improve 10%, 20%, and we put these big goals that sometimes make us scared, or we don't think we can accomplish it. But this is very tangible things that together make a great difference, right?
Well, something my mentor in psychology taught me many years ago is, like, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You know, you don't go, oh my God, there's a whole elephant, I can't eat that. You know, it's one bite at a time. And it's like, when I remember when I was doing my diploma, he said, it starts with the first word. As soon as you put pen to paper, everything else starts flowing. And often if we go, this is a 15,000 word document I've got to do, you're like, I'm going to put that off till later. Yeah. But if it's just one word, it's easy. And I think it's the same when you break it down to fixing the body or improvements. Look at 1%. Just look at the tiny little things. Have slightly better shoes. Yeah. You know, have slightly better sleep, or significantly better sleep. I mean, that's something I want to touch on for sports specifically for your topic, because I think one of my biggest biohacks of all, other than hydration, and I'm not just talking more water or slightly better water, like proper mineral water, proper mineralized water, is sleep optimization. Because, and the more people in the sports world I speak to, and in the business world, executives that want to really, really ramp up their game, that are 200 miles an hour, but they're burning themselves out. Or how do you make it so you don't burn out and you don't flatline at the end of each day? How do you make it so you're optimal? I think sleep optimization is key for this.
How much do you have to sleep? How many hours do you have to sleep?
Everyone's different. Like, yeah. I think this is one of the beliefs that I have within health optimization world, is that everyone is different. Everyone needs treating differently. And I think, just to touch on the diet, which I'll come back to later on, is people say, oh, the ketogenic diet is rubbish, or the carnivore diet is rubbish, or veganism is rubbish. Actually, no, they're all tools, because everyone's different. Everyone is different. So carnivore diet for 2 weeks helps reset the gut bacteria, stops feeding it with all the oxalates or lectins that come from certain foods. And it's a reset. Like paleo is a great one, actually, for ongoing, I think. And various bits and pieces. And I think these are just tools to help individuals get better. And when it comes to sleep, everyone is different. So for instance, for me, I know I work optimally, and I'm known for saying this, it's 7 hours, 41 minutes of sleep is my average. Yeah. Under that, sure, I can get away with 7 hours for a night or two. Over that, and it ends up having the opposite effect. 8 hours too many times, I become knackered again.
Do you go to bed the same time every night?
No,
or it doesn't matter.
No, it does matter for your circadian rhythm, really. It's optimal to do so, but because I'm traveling a lot, I have many different things on, flying around the world pretty much all the time at the moment, my circadian rhythm is all over the place. But the important thing is to reset it and get enough sleep, because without enough sleep, your body doesn't heal properly. So 7 hours, 41 minutes is what I go for. Yeah. I set my alarm for 7 hours, 50 minutes every night. So even if I go to bed at 4 a.m, I won't get up until that time. Yeah. If I'm flying, however, I trick it by sleeping half the amount that I should in the time zone, and then half when I get to the place I need to get to, as well as other biohacks. But for the sleep, everyone is different. Every single person is different. And yes, sure, 7.5 hours is a good, you know, finger in the air for everyone. I use the Aura ring, and I'm testing the Whoop wristband at the moment as well, to see the accuracy of data between the two. Yeah. And it tracks your resting heart rate variability, respiratory rate, total sleep, REM sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, and various other things. I think it tracks about 100 data points and reports on like 30 of them. And for me, anyone that I consider a real biohacker doesn't just go, oh, I base it on how I feel. Sure, okay, but that's not biohacking. If you base it on how you feel subjectively, if you've got the data, you can't question it. And when you do this, n equals one, sure, with me on my own, you know, that's important for me because everyone's individual. But if we do it across 300, 400, 500 people, you know, that's really strong data, and no one can push back against that. It's like, well, actually, yes, what they're doing is working. Show,
yeah, and you're measuring 35 plus biomarkers on yourself every day, right?
Yeah. So that's some of it's subjective, is in terms of how do I feel in terms of energy or mental clarity. But there's other things like what's my specific gravity within urine and pH of urine, which is people find odd sometimes.
You don't drink urine, do you, right?
No way.
Because
no way.
I met with Lyoto Machida, the UFC champion, and his father read a book about an Indian doctor in Japan. So his father actually drinks the first urine of the day, every day. I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's quite interesting.
Well, for me, that is really interesting. I mean, I'm not an expert in that area, but I will tell you my opinion on it. And I think is that urine is to help clear, well, it's there because you're cleansing your blood, basically. You're flushing all the toxins out.
Yeah.
So why would you drink it? But the other aspect is if you're not drinking proper water and it's not mineralized properly because it's just either too filtered or whatever, then you're actually concentrated urine in the morning is very mineral rich. So if you're drinking, you're actually getting minerals that you're just peeing out. So I think having good quality water, we're not made to drink our own waste. We're just not. Like, would you do the same with the other?
Yeah.
You just wouldn't. You know, it's like, well, actually, it's, you know.
It's interesting.
So I think personally for me, and I think hydration being one of the main areas that I focus on, sleep and hydration, I would say just have some really good minerals and not just adding magnesium in, which throws everything else out, or potassium in, which throws everything else out. Having a good all-round mineral. Yeah. Himalayan rock salt in water is good.
I want to talk more about water because there's so many people talking about, especially when we buy these plastic bottles and even the water out here. I mean, I'm from Sweden. The water there is amazing. I don't know how it is in London, but we can talk more about that. But let's address your blue tongue before it stops being blue. What's going on there?
So it's methylene blue.
And what's that?
And essentially, from what I hear, it's one of the first pharmaceuticals ever made, methylene blue. And it's a natural antibacterial, antifungal, and it's classed as a smart drug within the biohacking world. So for me, it gives me extra mental clarity.
It works? It feels better?
Yeah. I mean, it's known within the biohacking circles to be quite good. I mean, I've tested aniracetam as well, phenylparacetam, all the different racetams from the racetam group, which is really good smart drugs, but I found that after optimizing myself to a certain point, my mental clarity doesn't really get improved by it that much anymore. So I've been testing new ones, and a very good friend of mine is formulating one at the moment, which is various things in it. It's got a little bit of CBD and methylene blue in it, and a couple of other things I can't talk about just yet.
Yeah.
But it's very, very good. So, but it does, because it's methylene blue, it makes your tongue blue. I keep it on one side of my mouth, so I have half a blue tongue. So, I mean, you're going to see it go viral.
I'm actually taking a picture while we're doing the podcast. This is actually pretty fun before it goes away. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see it on Instagram.
Yeah.
You're going to get the biohacker circle to test it.
What's the bio effects?
So, what's the what, sorry?
Bio effects.
Well, I mean, I use it specifically for mental clarity. Yeah. And for instance, when I'm doing a podcast, then I need to be at the top of my game.
And you can feel the difference?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's not the extreme of limitless. It's not, definitely not. There's nothing like that on at the moment. And sure, microdosing does help you to think differently and connect the dots, which I've enjoyed in the past. But this is a good, clean way of having your brain really sharp. And I look at it like I'm in a maze and I'm able to see what's around the corner. And when you're in a conversation, you're just on point. You can work things out very clearly. It's very nice and clean. But because it can't be patented, because it's such an old pharmaceutical, then it's not widely accepted anymore. Like many other things out there, unfortunately, it's a very money-driven world. I think it's lovely, and people do question the blue tongue, and I think it's going to have a bit of a viral effect going forward once this product gets out there.
And is there any bio effects using this?
I don't know of any, in all honesty. I mean, one thing, if you do take too much of it, then your pee goes green. Depending if you're supplementing with specific vitamin Bs and your pee's yellow.
How about your ears? Do they become green?
No. I mean, I found nothing from it. And it's been put together by one of the smartest people. One of his IQs well over 200 on a good day and just under on a bad day. And he's... a friend, a mentor of a friend of mine. So, and he's a very, very good doctor.
Yeah.
And so he comes of good standing. I trust him. I know methylene blue has been spoken about by Dave Asprey from Bulletproof and quite a few other people in this space as well. So, yeah.
So how did your life change after reading The Game? Like which route did it go?
I think I'd already been into psychology and body language and various areas, but I think for me I was a workaholic. I was focusing on growing a company, didn't really have much interaction with the outside world. I didn't even go away for like 4 years, 3 or 4 years. Uh-huh. And someone told me about this book and I read it. I couldn't put the thing down. I loved it. I would literally leave the office and I'd go and sit near the lake near my office at the time and read it out and it was just incredible. And it made me realize that communication was even more important than I'd thought about before. And it's funny because whenever anyone hears pickup or The Game, they think, oh, manipulating, just trying to, you know, bang hot chicks. It's just like, and I had this conversation over dinner a few weeks ago. It's not about that. For some guys, it is. But for the other mindset is, well, what happens if it's a really good guy, but he's too scared to speak to a girl because he hasn't got the confidence, because he's never been taught, because he hasn't seen his dad acting like, you know, whatever in front of women, and or he hasn't got a father figurehead in his life. And I think it's actually learning the confidence to be who you are on the inside, on the outside. And they say fake it till you make it. For me, pickup was to learn to be on the outside, who you are on the inside, and not care about what people think about you, but do it because it's fun for you or you're adding value to the world. And I think that's what I learned from The Game. I went from being absolutely scared to speak to anyone, even in the queue in Subway. I remember when I read the book, I was in the queue in Subway and I was scared to ask the person in front of me what sub they were having. Now, like, if you know me, like, I'm interacting with the world, I'm laughing and joking with everyone. It's a really important part of my life. And that's who was caged on the inside. Yeah. Learning The Game and more psychology really helped me to explore that. And that's brought me to where I am today in terms of health, because I just chatted to people. Like, I was in Upgraded Labs in Beverly Hilton last week, and that's where I met David. It's just because we're just chatting, because we're just open to be able to do that. Once upon a time, I'd be scared and that whole journey wouldn't be happening. And we wouldn't be here today because I wouldn't have met the person that put us in touch with each other. And it's just incredible. So I think it would be amazing if you had Neil on the podcast, because I think he's, from what I've read of his books, he's been on a similar journey, and it's really makes you as a man, not just about women. Yeah. It's not.
So how important is happiness in life? Because you said, I want to be on this planet. I want to be playful. I want to see it as something amazing. Mm. Is it important to be happy, or is impact much more important?
If you're not happy, what's the point?
Maybe you're helping others.
But you got to be happy helping others. Otherwise, you're doing everything for everyone else, not for yourself. It starts with you, which is why you've got to build a solid foundation. They say put your own oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
In the event of a plane crash.
Yeah. You know, but do you think Gandhi was always happy, and Nelson Mandela? They made a huge impact.
Yeah, true. It's very, very true. But you've got to be happy. I'm sure they enjoyed the ride. Maybe not at times. You know, it's like we are here, we are going here, and there's going to be ups and downs and bumps in the road. But ultimately, you've got to enjoy the ride. And I think it's interesting that Mark Manson wrote a book recently, who came from Pickup originally, called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
We're allowed to curse.
Okay, so it's a lot of not giving a fuck. Again, as a side note, that apparently that the top selling books at the moment have all got that word in the title. Doing very well as a result. Profanity always works. One of the things that he talks about in the book is that essentially the story of Buddha, about the prince, the way he was born. His dad, the king, said, I don't want I don't want my son to go through anything that I've seen on this nasty world. I want him to have everything he wants. So he built a castle with a massive great wall around it and gave him all the food and all the women and everything he'd ever need. And the son got depressed at 20 or whatever and escaped and went and lived in a village eating rats off the street, and he became depressed again. And after years of doing that, he went and sat on a hill underneath a tree for however many days and contemplating. He's like, when I had everything, I was depressed. And when I had nothing, I was depressed. It's like, so surely, you know, like, it's about enjoying the ride. It's not about this. And that's the story of Buddha, of how he became very Zen. And there's a story that resonates with me very, very, very strongly. And I think this is, I hope, for the listener as well, is that the story of the horse that ran away. And this, I think, came from Mark Manson as well, of a man who goes from his village to plow the field every day with his horse. One day the horse runs away, goes back to the village, and in the evening the villagers say, oh, you know, let's call him Bob. Bob, you must be so disappointed. Your horse ran away. And he went, well, it just is, you know. The next day he goes back, and the horse comes back, but with a wild stallion. And so in the evening when he's going back to the village, the villagers go, Bob, you're so lucky. Wow. And he goes, it just is, you know. Next day he takes his son to the field to plow and to tame the wild stallion. And the stallion throws off his son and breaks his leg in several places. So in the evening when he goes back to the village, he goes back and the villagers go, oh my God, Bob, your son. Oh, you must be so disappointed. He went, it's not ideal, but it just is. Next day, there's a knock at the door. And it's the National Guards, or the military come for their son. And he said, I'm sorry, my son's broken his leg, he can't go. That evening he goes to the pub and the villagers go, oh my God, Bob, you're so lucky. He went, just is. The point is, we are here, we are going here, and there's going to be ups and downs along the way. We can be upset or happy with each and every one, or we can enjoy the ride and go, no, we know the destination and let's do the most we can from it. And I think that is absolutely key in this journey. You know,
to accept what just, is.
Yeah, this is a journey. And it's like, and says, all day, you know, like, so happy, so upset, so happy. Just try and keep mindful of that. And I think that's where Stoicism, a big part of Stoicism, comes in. I think it's absolutely key. And I think media actually plays on that quite heavily, of getting us to be unhappy with stuff and then happy with stuff, because people are addicted to it. But I think that's the mindset, is to just remember where we're going and enjoy the ride.
I love that. And also, being a martial artist, this is like the true martial artist, or the true samurais back in the day. They meditated upon death, you know, every day. Shave, get dressed, kiss your wife, kiss your kids, goodbye, because you never knew if you were coming back. And they were okay with that, because it was noble in a way, dying, doing I don't know if what you love, but what you were supposed to do, and because they had their purpose. And you talked about having your purpose, and either like having a purpose is the stories we tell ourselves, right? And we can decide what our purpose is in a way, I think, because we can tell ourselves a story. Like a lot of people that I meet, they tell themselves stories that aren't good enough, that they can't own a business, or they can't start a hyperbaric oxygen treatment center, or be an athlete, because they're not good enough. And when we tell all these stories to ourselves, then we can. But we have to replace those stories with new stories, right? And that's why we're sitting here today, because you change your story, basically.
Well, I think the contemplating death or understanding sounds very morbid or not good, but I think it's a good part of Stoicism. And I think my mum said to me, well, why would you want to be Stoic, you know, if they're thinking about death every day? Well, hang on a minute. When someone in the family dies, doesn't everyone get together and say, oh, life's too short to have all these moans about each other? Like, let's just enjoy each other. And they remember just for a split second because of something like that happening. Or someone that's been really, really ill, and then they get back to where they were and they're like, actually, life's too short, I'm going to make the most of it. Well, that's the Stoic mindset right there. And I think that's the journey. You got to hold on to that and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, and I think, in a way, fuck, we're not going to be here forever. We better do something. And a lot of times we, as human beings, we wait with the change until we have to change, when we're backed up in a corner. And that's a great motivation, right? But if we can help ourselves a little bit and don't wait for that moment, I think we have so much to win, right?
When people say, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. It's funny because my nan taught me when I was a kid. And it's like, say you can do something, you will. Say you might and you won't. Yeah. And it's like, he who says he can or he who says he can't are both usually right. It's like, just go for it. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? And that's something I actually have on my mug when I have my morning coffee every day. One of five different quotes, but that's a key one for me. It's like, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? And I think it's absolutely key. I mean, Steve Jobs had a quote just to round off on that point, is that everything around us was made by people like us. Yeah. You know, every single thing around us. And we can shape and change this world that people use. You know, if you remember that anything is possible. And I think it's a big game changer quote. It's not word for word, but I think it's so true. Every single object, every single thing we see around us was really made by someone just like us. And if everyone had the same mindset of, I can't do that, then we wouldn't be where we are right now. And it's a pretty good world. I mean, there's issues that we're all working on, but it's a pretty good world. We're very lucky. We're very, very lucky.
Yeah, we are. And this has been amazing, Tim. I only have two more questions, and then we're going to let you out in the sun and enjoy the last days in Cali. So I want you to contemplate about your life and imagine you're 87 years old now and you're sitting in a rocking chair overlooking, I don't know, the ocean or a favorite spot in London or wherever you want to be. And you are thinking about your life. What do you want to see have been accomplished to be able to say, oh shit, this was a good run?
The rocking chair question I've thought of many times. It's actually something that my mentor got me to think of many years ago.
Oh, wonderful.
And I try to live every day like that, actually, of being mindful that I haven't openly, publicly spoken about this, but I had a seizure end of last year. And it was very close to me. And it was part of my health journey, optimizing myself to try and make sure that I have a good life. They said if I hadn't been so good with my health, then it might not have been the same story. Yeah. But I think at that moment when I was having a seizure, and it was a pretty bad one, I was thinking there was only one thing that I regret, and that was not actually falling in love and having children. Apart from that, I consider this to be an absolutely incredible journey with some absolutely amazing people on it. Like, surround yourself with the best people because the world changes significantly, opposed to the energy vampires or miserable people that just bring you down. Having those people around you just changes the world, and I think there's no regret at all. If something was to happen to me, I would regret those two things. And one of those I've changed. The other, maybe in the future, who knows? But the point is that I'm doing that. I am doing that. And as hard as some of the decisions may be, like what would I regret not doing? And it's actually Mark Manson, to quote him again, he shared out an article about how to make decisions based on want or regret. And it's like, what would I regret more? Would I regret more not doing this or not doing that? And it's like, well, it makes it very easy when you look at it as in, what would you regret more? You know, would I regret more not going to this party tonight? Would I regret more feeling really horrible tomorrow? Well, actually, okay, sure. Actually, I can do both in that case. I can go to the party. I just make sure that I don't feel bad in the morning by either not drinking or biohacking it. So, yeah, that would be my answer for that.
I love that. And when it comes down, like, it's so interesting because it's our DNA. We want to create a family, most of us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something we all strive for. And we live in a modern world where so much other things is coming in the way a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So I'm super happy that you're aware of that and you're working towards that. So it's amazing.
Thank you.
And the last question I want to ask you is also something that I ask all my guests, and that is, the people that are listening to this now, they got so many tools, but at the end of the day, what I really want them to do is right after this podcast, start changing something in their life, because there's so many people that can improve their life, but they don't know exactly how to get started. So if you can just give them one tool to get started right now, what would that be?
I trust my unconscious and it's going sleep.
Yeah.
Optimize your sleep properly.
Yeah.
I like the data approach of biohacking, and Obviously, I use this Oura Ring to do that, and I think that's been a massive difference, a massive, massive difference for me. Yeah. And then everything that follows, optimizing sleep, grounding bed sheet, blackout blinds, silicone earplugs when you need to, a little bit of niacin, sometimes melatonin, depending on where you are in your sleep cycle, circadian rhythms, or where you are in the world, or what's happened in the past week. Using the right essential oils, all these things. I mean, optimizing your sleep, using it from data to know exactly what you're doing, is the most important thing. The other thing is, second thing would be, surround yourself with absolutely amazing people. Yeah, absolutely amazing people, like Scott, who put us in touch with each other, is an incredible guy that I met just through another incredible guy saying, hey, you guys should hang out. And when he recommends to speak to someone, I do, you know, and I hold him in the highest regard. And without that, the opposite is someone that I don't respect. You know, why would you have those? It's just like, while people aren't disposable, you should try and work on it. But sometimes it's about focusing on the good and enjoying the ride. So those are the two things that I'd recommend.
I love that. And I totally agree, because life is energy, and we are, sometimes people say, hustle, sleep 2 hours a day, work 360 hours a week, which don't even exist. And I mean, if we look at the people that are performing well, they have a balance in their life, at least when it comes to sleep and diet and being with the right people. So Tim Gray, it's been a pleasure having you here all the way from London. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everybody that listened to this podcast. We are on a big, fat mission to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. But every person counts, and we are truly so happy that you're listening to this. If you want more tools, go to ilovesuccess.co. I'll give you a couple of free chapters of my book. There's a whole bunch of videos and podcasts so you can get started setting your goals and becoming that person that you really want to be. And help us on this mission by giving us a review on iTunes so more people can see this, share it, send it to someone that you feel can benefit, because I can't do this myself. Tim can't do it himself, but together we can go so far. Thanks again, and see you guys soon.